Ackerman today.
Morning. How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. All right.
Here we go again. Governor and the executive branch. So, just like the President of these United States of America is considered the chief executive, the same is true with governors across the country. Your book in the executive branch chapter basically tells us the job of the governor is to be the state's top cop, so to speak. Their job is to ensure that all of the laws of the state, as well as any relevant laws from the federal government, are applied and enforced within their state or territories. They have many important tasks. But of course, as we all know, much of the executive authority has been delegated to the bureaucracy. Because one individual cannot do all enforcement in any state. So, because much of their actual power is delegated, given away to the different government agencies, that pretty much leaves the governor as being a political figure, as well as a ceremonial figure. They, for all sakes and purposes, are the face of their states. And by the way, all 50 states have governors. There's not a state in the union that does not have a governor. And all states directly elect their governors. There's no governors that are appointed. Now, of the 50 states, 36, including Massachusetts, hold their elections for their governors and their executive branches in what is known as the midterm election. Midterm of what? Anyone hear that expression before? Midterm? Midterm of what? It's reference to the presidential term. So obviously we elect a president every 4 years. Last presidential election was 2024. Current president Donald Trump is going to be in office until 2028. Well, technically 2029, January. But the next election will be in 2028. So when I refer to the phrase midterm, we're talking about the 2026 election. So our entire executive branch is up for re-election in 2026. Now, as far as actual power, well, it depends upon the individual state constitutions. But most of governors have a lot of power, a lot of authority. But rather than trying to go through any constitution and pick out every last little area of power, we'll focus on probably the most important power. And that is the power of veto. All states require the governors to be active in the legislative process. They are part of the checks and balances of the system. There's not a governor in this country that doesn't have the power to veto a bill. Now, by the way, qualified negative vetoes. But Massachusetts does not. There are 43 states that give governors the power of a line item veto. Anyone know what that is? Line item veto is where the government can basically take the budget and just veto a line. So they don't have to veto the whole budget. They can just like use a scalpel and cut out a line. Massachusetts does not have that. Most states allow for the legislative branch to override a veto. Some are like Massachusetts, where it takes a two-thirds vote. But there are states out there that require a three-fifths vote. Which is higher, two-thirds or three-fifths? What is higher, two-thirds or three-fifths? What's a higher percentage? Two-thirds, yeah. Interestingly enough, there are four states that it only takes a majority vote in the legislature. Not that you need to know them, but Alabama, Indiana, Kentucky, and Tennessee. The most recent state to put a provision in for overriding vetoes was North Carolina. They amended their constitution to give that power to the legislature back in 1996. But, as is in the U.S. Constitution, the veto power, again, is a significant tool, because if the legislature can't override the veto, that's the governor's power to essentially stop a bill from coming to law. Questions? All right. Another important power is the power to appoint a vacancy if there's an opening for one of the state's United States senators. Now, every single state is different. In 47 states, the governor has the power to temporarily fill a vacancy until a special election is held. Three states allow the governor to fill the vacancy, and it basically becomes permanent, so that there's no requirement for a special election. Now, interestingly enough, in Massachusetts, about a decade ago,
This was a huge, significant issue that popped up.
Ted Kennedy, the brother of former President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, died. And his seat was vacant. It actually goes back even further. This is when John Kerry ran for president. So this was back in 2004. This is a better example. So when John Kerry was running for president, John Kerry was a former senator from Massachusetts. Early polls looked like he was going to win, that he was going to beat George W. Bush. But the problem was, is at the time, we had a Republican governor. Mitt Romney was governor. So, the Democrats started kind of freaking out about the fact that a Republican governor might have the power to appoint a Republican to serve as senator until a special election happened. So Massachusetts actually contemplated changing the law to make it so that way there would not be a temporary fill, but rather no one could take the seat until a special election.
But then when John Kerry lost, that bill kind of died in the general court. But yes, partisan politics always play a role with every decision. And again, it's partisan politics by both the D's and the R's. All right. The other important job of a governor is they're supposed to report the state of their state. Kind of like the president gives the State of the Union address, in which the president's supposed to report on, you know, the economic and vitality, health of the nation. Well, governors are supposed to do that same thing. Now, ironically, many of the older constitutions, like the Constitution of the Commonwealth, stipulate that the governor should occasionally give a report. I think in our Constitution it was phrased from time to time. But many of the more modern constitutions actually put a required date by which the state of the state must be given. We typically, the governor in Massachusetts does the state of the state, depending upon whether they are a new governor starting their first year in office, or if they've been in office for many years. If it's a new governor, typically the state of the state doesn't happen until like March. But if it's a governor that's in the midst of their term, the state of the state usually is the end of January. The local Boston channels carried Maura Healey's last one. So, they have a role in legislature, the legislative process. They have an appointment power, and of course, they are supposed to be the face of their state to their people. Questions? All right. Specifically, what are they supposed to do? Well, your book, uses the line that governors wear many hats. They are the top policymaker. They're the chief legislator. They're the chief administrator. They're a ceremonial leader. They're involved in intergovernmental regulations. They're supposed to promote economic development. They serve as a political party leader, etc., etc., etc. There's not just a job, but rather there's a whole bunch of different tasks and duties that governors are supposed to engage with or engage in. Of these, arguably, the most important one is their participation in developing a policy. The book states that the governor is, and I quote, "the leading formulator and initiator of public policy in his or her state." They are the ones that are supposed to figure out how to do the people's bidding. I mean, we've talked about policy a couple of times. Policy, of course, is the principles or the rules, you know, that to guide the decision-making process. So it's like an intent, it's an idea. Of course, policy is not the same as law. Law is policy enacted in the form of statutes. But policy is meant to be a guide on expectations. So, for example, my select board, we have a policy that states if we certify free cash more than $2 million, we want 20% of the money over $2 million to go to our OPEB fund. Other post-employment benefits, OPEB. Now that's just a policy. So what happens if we were in a situation where the town was in dire straits? Well, because the policy is not a rule, we could just simply say this year we're not going to do it. Or maybe we'll give 10%. Well, governors essentially do that. There's an idea they want to try getting done, or there's a way of handling things that's important to them. So that's the policy they push. So, for example, and I'll give you two examples of the last two governors in terms of policy. Not meaning to be controversial, just giving you examples. Charlie Baker, previous governor, he was a friend of big contractors. And it was Charlie Baker's administration that started pushing for the change in zoning laws. Because towns were fighting back on big developments. Charlie Baker did this because he got a lot of big money donations from some of the big contracting firms that were in the state. So as a policy, he kind of rallied the legislative branch to pass some laws to make it more easier for these mega apartment structures to be built. And for the two that came to town meeting, you know, Sutton dealt with the MBTA. That's what that's all about. That was part of Baker's policy. So the statute was a codification of his ideas on how to get a solution to housing shortages, or the perceived, alleged housing shortages that are in Massachusetts. Our current governor, Maura Healey, she is really big pro-LGBT. So a lot of her policies focus on getting preferential treatment or more access to people that are in the LGBT communities. Questions? Now, if someone runs against Maura Healey and beats her, they'll bring their own ideas for policy. And that may have an impact on the direction the Commonwealth goes in the near future.
All right.
Governors are also supposed to be cheerleaders of sorts for bills. Now, this is this comes from the book. This is a summary of what the book tells you. The book tells us that governors get involved in the legislative process to achieve specific goals. Now, with the exception of Massachusetts, governors cannot directly introduce bills within the state legislatures. Massachusetts is the only one where a governor can. Of course, they have to get sponsored by members of the general court. So because most governors can't file the bills themselves, they basically have to work with the legislative leaders. You know, if there's a governor in a red state, you know, it makes sense that the governor has good relations with the Republican leaders. Or if it's a blue state, you know, vice versa. But interestingly enough, even in Massachusetts, sometimes there's tension that goes beyond the partisan divide that makes getting bills through challenging. For instance, on the issue of partisanship, Massachusetts, we've covered, overwhelmingly Democrat state. Our state has been gerrymandered. All of the districts, even though there's in voter turnout, there's usually about 40% of the people that vote for Republicans. Almost every single elective office at the state level, as well as in the legislatures we covered, as well as our congressional delegation, all controlled by Democrats. Well, not all Democrats are the same. Back when two governors ago, Deval Patrick, he was a two-term governor, good friend of Barack Obama. The Democrats that controlled the general court did not get along with the governor. They constantly butted heads. And as a result, there were many of Deval Patrick's initiatives that the leader, the Speaker of the House and the Senate President, basically said, too bad to. Why? It was less about party, but in that instance, it was about personality. If a governor doesn't get along with the legislative leaders, they have a hard time getting their policy goals achieved. I'll give you an example. Former governor of Arizona, Janet Napolitano, she was a Democrat. She was a Democrat. But her state legislature was controlled by the Republicans. Well, she would veto over 100 bills that came from the Republican-controlled legislature. She was a strong governor and she refused to compromise on principle.
Well, she got rewarded when the people of Arizona, even though they kept the Republicans in the majority in the state legislature, they reelected her as a Democrat back to her office.
Similar thing happened in Massachusetts. Even though Deval Patrick was a Democrat, and he was battling with the Democrat legislators, Massachusetts gave him a second term.
He could have run for him a third term, because we don't have term limits, but he was looking to go to the private sector, where he ended up making like tons and tons of money.
I think he was a lobbyist.
Another tool that governors can attempt to exploit to get legislation through is they can get involved in elections.
Have you ever heard of the phrase, ride your coattails?
Well, if there's a figure that's popular, sometimes the legislators will play nice with a popular governor to make it easier for them to win re-election. For example, when Charlie Baker was governor, before a lot of people got angry with him over how he dealt with the COVIDs, Charlie Baker passed and pushed for many policies that the Democrats wanted. Well, many of the elected Republicans in the state House didn't want to lose their jobs. So rather than standing and voting like a traditional Republican, you know, they voted with the Democrats to make it easier for them to run.
Why? Well, very simple.
And Charlie Baker's first midterm election, he ended up giving money to Democrat candidates to knock out some Republican legislators who voted against his agenda.
So if the governor's clever, he can play the game. He can play hardball politics, or she can.
But of course, there's always the reality that if the governor is not popular, they're going to lose the election.
So, how do they booster their unpopularity?
Well, they put money in the budget. Pork. Give away money, grants, unrestricted general aid, things like that. Your book calls it pork.
So, I'll give you an example.
There was a state rep about towards the end of Charlie Baker's term that was all in. Actually, it was Paul Frost from Auburn. He was all in on Charlie Baker's COVID restrictions. And as a reward, Charlie Baker put some money that went directly to Auburn, which is Paul Frost's hometown, to help Auburn build a new fire station. It's going to go on Route 20, just down the road from where BJ's is.
Governors have that authority, because after all, governors are the ones who build the budgets. So by using their power to distribute money, that can help win votes. And that can also help win loyalty. Governors can also do things that aren't as public, They can hold banquets and invite legislatures to attend. Although we don't have a governor's mansion in Massachusetts. But I'll use what Trump is doing. You know, Trump is currently in the process of building a grand ballroom at the White House. There are some states that have governor's mansions and have similar. So the governor will host like a special party. They'll invite like someone who's famous to come in. And then all the legislators who get the invite, you know, get that personal treatment. Your book goes into it more. But it kind of comes down to what Machiavelli was attributed to have said. You know, the ends justify the means. How many palms do you got to grease, you know, to get your bill enacted? Questions? Okay, see none. The next job of the governor is, well, they got to run the executive branch. They are the chief administrator. They are like the CEO in a corporation. Their job is to make sure that all of the agencies do what they're supposed to do. Now, here's the funny thing. There are many people in our society that believe governors, like the president, is a king. That they can make decrees. That they control the economy. Truth be told, it's the farthest thing from reality. Which, of course, is the irony about all of those crazy people that went out and did like the No Kings rally. You know, I kind of got to kind of chuckle out of that, because if we actually had a king, there would be no rallies. The very fact that they had rallies is proof that we don't have a king. But whatever. But there are many people that think it. Truth be told, as far as an individual governor's ability to control anything, yeah, they have leverage. They can try to persuade. But they actually have little power. Because as I said, and I'll repeat, much of the executive authority by law has been given to the bureaucracy. So in many ways, the governors are more like cheerleaders. You know, they can root for the legislature to pass a particular bill. Or they can, you know, root for the bureaucracy to enact a type of policy. But they actually cannot dictate. They cannot tell them what to do. They can't compel. Why? Constitution. And this is the point that you can make if you have anybody that believes that Donald Trump is a king, or that Maura Healey is a queen. No, they're really not. Our Constitution has clear separation of powers. And there's also numerous checks and balances, up to and including impeachment. So if there ever was a governor that tried getting out of hand, they could be checked really quickly. So as I mentioned, and your book uses the example, governors are more like the CEOs of a corporation. Elon Musk is the CEO of Tesla. Does he design the cars? Does he build the cars? Does he test the cars? No, he actually doesn't do the work of Tesla. He's just the chief executive officer. His job is to manage the thousands of people that work for Tesla, the employees. Plus, Elon Musk has to work for the stockholders. Oh, I own Tesla stock. I bought it right after it split last time, and it's gone up 400%. He's got to work for me. And Elon Musk must deal with the board of directors at Tesla. Well, if you take that corporate structure and you apply it to a state, the governor is the CEO, the stockholders are the citizens, and the board of the directors is the legislative branch. So, to be effective, they must establish priorities, they must be able to manage crises, and they must try to balance contending interests. Because everybody wants something. If not, they'll lose control and they won't get anything done. So, here's something to consider with our current governor. Massachusetts has been in the crosshairs trying to resist the President of the United States and his desired policies, going so far as to violate state law. Well, Donald Trump has withheld money from Harvard University. Donald Trump has cut funding to Massachusetts for certain programs. And interestingly enough, the most recent thing I saw, Donald Trump may cut all the money to build new bridges. They were going to replace the Bourne Bridge and the Sagamore Bridge to get on the Cape. Trump cut that money. So how's Maura Healey going to handle it? Is she going to turn around and try playing nice with the administration? Or is she going to continue to resist? And there's risks for either. Because if suddenly she plays nice with the administration, her voting base, the progressive left Democrats, may view her as a traitor, and they may not vote for her. Or if she continues to resist and the economy of Massachusetts implodes, she's going to get the blame. So what's the correct course of action? Don't know. It all depends upon individuals' policies, but if she somehow manages to get through this, I'll give her credit. Because she would have dodged a bullet. A whole bunch of landmines. But not all politicians are adept at doing that. Sometimes they hit a mine and blow up. I'll give you an example. Chris Christie, former governor of New Jersey. People in his administration decided to try using the powers of the executive branch to sway an election for their state legislature. They intentionally put roadblocks on the bridges and the roads like barriers. So it took a 3-lane highway and squished it down to one. Intentionally causing traffic into all of the areas where all of the major Democratic leaders' districts were. Well, the problem is there that strategy got leaked to the news and it blew up in Chris Christie's face. So he ended up having not to seek re-election. He got himself into, he basically lost his job because of it. Similarly, he also at one point was thinking about running for president. But when violent storms hit the coast of New Jersey, and he went out
and played nice with Obama. That hurt him in the polls.
Oh, and lastly,
when COVID hit and all of the beaches were closed, Chris Christie actually took his family out onto the beach and enjoyed the beach all by himself.
So he made so many bad mistakes that it blew up in his face. He destroyed his aspirations of being governor or possibly president of the United States. See, I give credit to a Democrat and bash a Republican.
Equal opportunist. All right, master of ceremonies.
Governors are also supposed to be the heads of the state. They meet dignitaries. They give state honor awards or medals or other types of decorations. They issue symbolic proclamations. And they're supposed to go out and hobnob with the folks. Giving example, Moore Healey went out to the Big E. You know, the Big E was going on. She was supposed to go to that fire training that I had to cancel class for. She never showed up down there. I saw her last night. Was the opening night for the Celtics, right? I think I saw her on the news, so she went to the Garden. You know, because when she was in college, she played basketball. Some governors, you know, throw out the opening day pitch when baseball starts or go to a football game or something like that. Now, there's no requirement that they do this, but it's just, allowing them to just show, hey, you know something, we're just like everyday people. I don't think Massachusetts governors do it, but one of my favorite ridiculous ceremonies that's been part of American society for at least 100 years is when the president pardons turkeys. You know, I get a chuckle out of that. Or another big thing at the White House is when they do the Easter egg hunt. You know, they bring all the kiddies and little kiddos and they can go around and get the candy-filled eggs.
They do anything for Halloween?
I would assume that some states, like obviously we know Salem, you know, Halloween is always big with the witches and all the rest. So I wouldn't be surprised if you put on the local news stations and the governor or the lieutenant governor or something, you know, shows up in Salem or something like that. All right. Your book gives you other examples. One other thing that I got on a side note, some states allow the governors to have inauguration parades. You know, Massachusetts doesn't, but there are some states that do. Out of all the jobs that we've gone through so far, this one is pretty important. And it goes to the example that I was talking about, Moore Healey being an effective CEO. And that's coordinating intergovernmental relations. Governors are the point men and women between the state and the federal government. Their job is to engage in communications directly with the executive branch at the federal level. Again, I gave you the example of Chris Christie and Obama. We'll give you some more recent examples. Trump wants to send National Guardsmen to those cities where there's outrageous levels of crime and violence. Well, DeSantis in Florida, working closely with the administration, offered up Florida National Guardsmen to go and be deployed. There's about 500 of them just outside of Chicago right now.
he's playing nice. Whereas Governor Pritzker of Illinois is refusing to work with Donald Trump. So the governor of Illinois will not allow Illinois' National Guardsmen and women to be deployed to Chicago. By the way, the death rate, the murder rate in Chicago is higher than many countries on earth.
Every single week, something like 400 to 500 people get shot. Chicago is not a safe city overall. But you got Pritzker who's playing politics, and you got DeSantis who's playing politics. Both are governors. One is resisting, one is aiding. Governors are also supposed to engage with other states. Sometimes there are disputes. One of my favorite topics, although it's getting to the point when it's getting old, is when not too long ago there was a bad drought in the South, and Atlanta, Georgia, was down to something like a 2-week water supply. Like, a major city in the United States was on the verge of running out of running water. Well, part of the problem was, is, you know, the way the water flows. You know, it flows downstream from Tennessee. Well, the governor in Tennessee, because Tennessee has the TVA, I don't know if you've ever learned about that, the Tennessee Valley Association, where, like what happened with the Wachusett Reservoir, Tennessee made some dams, hydroelectric dams, in some valleys that basically made them waterways. Well, because something like 2/3 of Tennessee is dependent upon these dams and hydroelectricity, the Tennessee governor was really, really holding tight the flow of water. So his people didn't have or lose electricity. Whereas the governor of Georgia was fighting with the governor of Tennessee because he had his major city that was on the verge of having no water. So you had these governors that were in, it was public, it was in the news. They were pointing fingers, they were arguing, calling each other out. Luckily, the situation kind of worked itself out as the weather patterns changed and more rainfall fell, and, you know, that made it easier for both to handle the situations. Governors are also supposed to gauge in state-to-local relations. Although I can't tell you the last time a governor came to Sutton. Charlie Baker is lieutenant governor. She's over in Shrewsbury. I'm going to remember it when I leave. Oh, it's going to bug me. It's going to bother me. Hold on. LT Governor Massachusetts. Yes, I know Kim Driscoll is the current one. Who's her predecessor? Predecessor. Seriously, it doesn't say. Not Jane Swift. No, it's lieutenant governors. Karen Polito. Duh. Karen Polito, the former lieutenant governor. Sutton received a whole bunch of grant money from a couple of grants, and she actually came to our senior center and presented us with a big fake check. But when Deval Patrick was governor, he came pretty close. He actually went to Puffin's restaurant in Millbury. It was before Puffin's burned down. It was the previous incarnation. And I just, out of sheer luck, I just missed him because I like owner Puffins. Puffins, good breakfast. But apparently, he was coming up 146, decided, oh, I'm going to go check out and see what downtown Millbury's like, and was getting to go back on 146 and saw Puffin, stopped and had himself breakfast. Good PR. It was in the Millbury Sutton Chronicle. It was a good story. But he was out there just kind of shake the hands with the local folks. I think he did go to town hall too and have a meeting with their selectmen. So, governor, point-to-point person. Federal, state, state-to-state, state-to-local. Governors are also, by default, members in what's a group called the National Governors Association. This is a board, obviously, made up of all the governors in the country. Generally, they meet twice a year. And the goal is to coordinate strategy between the states and the national government. The NGA also maintains a Center for Best Practices. So the NGA offers like webinars and newsletters. You can submit articles for review. So many of the states, you know, have a program that is seemingly successful. They share it with the NGA, and other states contemplate, you know, putting the policy into effect. But of course, many NGA meetings, from what I've read about, I've never been able to even come close to attending, but it really depends on what's going on at a national level. Sometimes the D's and the R's play nice with one another, and sometimes, you know, hyper-partisanship kicks in. But you never know. All right. Almost done for the day. Because I made you do a test, we're going to call it early today. Promoting economic development. Governors actively engage in the recruitment of large businesses, hoping that they set up operations within the state. Also, if they hear of a business thinking of leaving, they also meet with them to try to negotiate to keep them. One of the most hilarious things that I've seen in recent years is when former Texas Governor Rick Perry actually used hundreds of thousands of dollars of his own campaign money and ran radio advertisements in California. Basically advertising the simple fact that Texas has low taxes, Texas has low regulations, and Texas has, according to the ad, and I quote, a fair legal system. One of the biggest companies that Rick Perry managed to grab because of the taxes and the regulations and the ridiculousness of California, Tesla. We used to make Teslas in California, but the regulations and the taxes were killing them. So they relocated to Texas. Governors also attempt to increase tourism. Sometimes they go in on commercials and talk about, you know, the wonderful things, you know, that are in place in their states. You know, every now and then. Well, I haven't seen one in recent years, but every now and then I remember as a kid, there would be advertisements on TV for going to New York City, you know, to go see the Statue of Liberty and the museums and Times Square. And I think it was Governor Pataki, a former governor. He was always like the person who was the spokesperson on the ad. Or not too long ago, BP, British Petroleum. There was a massive oil leak. One of the oil platforms got hit by a storm and became untethered from the pipelines that they were pumping the oil out. And there was a huge oil spill in the Gulf. Well, after it was all cleaned up, all of the governors of the Gulf states each independently advertised, you know, it's all cleaned up, come back to the Gulf. Sometimes, and this is usually controversial, sometimes governors travel abroad to try to see if they could recruit international companies to come in to their states. Former governor of Wisconsin, Matt Mead, in 2021, he traveled to China to attend the International Advanced Coal Technologies Conference. And he was one of the first governors to recruit Chinese companies to come and set up in Wyoming. Although, interestingly enough, he had aspirations becoming a president. But when a bunch of American businesses were gobbled up by Chinese companies in Wyoming, the people of his state were not too pleased. So he had to retire. So again, they're trying to do something they think is good, but, you know, politically, there are always consequences. All right, the last little bit we'll give you today, because like I said, we'll get you out early because I tested you, is they're the leaders of their political party. Governors, even though they're not really powerful in their party, are technically the highest ranking members of their party. So, how does it work? Well, they help out with endorsements during legislative elections. Sometimes they run ads, you know, with potential candidates, or they make appearances. My senator, Ryan Fatman, he has, I think, two or three times when Baker was governor, he actually had Baker go to his events, his fundraising events. So you make a $100 donation to the Fatman campaign, and you have a chance to meet the governor. I met Charlie Baker several times. I was not really impressed with him. And I told him as such. He really took offense when I called him a male Barbie. True story. Marcos, you've been to Waters Farm, I assume.
Yep.
You've been into the Darling Barn.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Ryan was having a big, just like a powwow with area Republicans there. And Lou Evangelitis, the sheriff of Worcester County. Any of you ever met Sheriff Lou? He's one of the greatest politicians that I've ever met. He's just real. He's decent. He remembers people, which is good. But Lou is like 6'7". Charlie Baker's like 6'4". So Baker gave a little speech, and he kind of bumbled with his words and whatever. But Lou gets up there and gives a speech. And Lou is controlling the whole room. Well, Charlie, out of the blue in the back, gets jealous of how people are fawning over Lou, and he grabs some of the rafter beams and starts doing pull-ups. And he pulls himself up and he's like, look, now I'm the tallest Republican in the room. The face that you made, everyone kind of turned around and looked at him like, what are you doing? But if a governor makes an appearance, that's a good way to have a chance to meet him. And sometimes they're very active in campaigns. So, for example, when Elizabeth Warren first ran for Senate, and she still is an awful speaker, but she had no experience in politics. So Governor Deval Patrick, whenever Liz Warren was getting interviewed, he'd take the mic and he'd answer the questions for her, which was such a bizarre dynamic. But the people of Massachusetts voted for her nonetheless. So, why does the governor play politics? Well, again, it comes down, politics is a blood sport. It's a team sport. If you are an R, you want the R's to win. If you are a D, you want the D's to win. Or at the very least, you want people who are going to vote for your agenda in office. So, getting back to Charlie Baker, he lost the base, the support of most Republican voters, when he started campaigning with Democrats to beat Republicans. And Mitt Romney did the same thing about 15 years before. Why? Well, he chose to go across the aisle as opposed to support the people in his own tent. So, sometimes it works out, sometimes it does not. All right, questions? All right, well, we're going to call it a class today. When we come back, we're going to, we kind of covered in general the governor stuff. And what we'll do, like we did with the legislature, we'll come back and we'll talk about Massachusetts-specific stuff. And then once we finish with the Massachusetts governor, we'll go into the courts. We'll talk about the judiciary. And then we'll cover the bureaucracy, and then we'll have our third exam. But it won't be in 2.5 weeks. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.